10. On Parnassos, 10 years ago. Phasma and her warriors had their work cut out for them on the way back to the Skyre. It was slow going. The whole way there, Phasma focused on better understanding Brendel's strange accent and peculiar vocabulary. With the translator droid gone, lost somehow in the skirmish, she was determined to communicate on her own terms. He was polite and helpful for the most part, but he did have to correct her frequently.
"Stop calling me Brendel Hux," he muttered. "So long as we're on this blasted planet, just call me Brendel."
"Your people have more than one name?" Phasma asked, fascinated. Brendel shrugged.
"Some do. Some go by numbers, like my soldiers."
"I don't think I'd want to be a number," Phasma said, turning to watch the three troopers.
"Depends on your priorities," Brendel snapped. "They consider it a worthwhile trade for a better life."
Phasma took it upon herself to help him traverse the terrain, and although he wasn't as nimble and strong as his warriors, between Torben's muscle and Phasma's patience, Brendel didn't slow them down too terribly. His soldiers, Siv reported, were well-trained, quick to improvise, and tirelessly devoted to their superior. Although she'd already pledged to help them find their ship, Phasma continued to store away information on these strangers from the stars, trying to better understand their ways and speech. The original journey had taken half a day, perhaps, to get to Baldur's territory, but it took longer to return. The warriors were tired, several had sustained minor injuries, and Brendel himself was neither agile nor quick and had little muscle mass. His life in the stars must have been an easy one, the warriors whispered among themselves. As they stopped on one of the last of the plateaus to rest and eat, Phasma monopolized Brendel's time, asking him question after question as she struggled to master the intricacies of his language. She wanted to know about his life, about the ships, about why the First Order needed warriors. She was especially interested in their training programs, as she'd watched the troopers in white armor fight during the battle with Baldur's claws and had found much to admire in their calm, their aim, their nerves, and the way they reflexively followed orders. Brendel seemed happy enough to talk, though his watery eyes darted everywhere, scanning the sky constantly as if rescuers might arrive unrequested at any moment. He spoke slowly as Phasma sorted out their language differences, but it was obvious he had no interest in learning about the Skyre folk and their speech patterns. All his questions were about the planet as a whole.
"But what happened here?"
he asked, waving an arm, his nose wrinkled up as if the air carried a bad smell.
"There's a powerful defense system, but nothing else. No cities, no signals."
"We don't know," Phasma told him. "Generations ago, we had technology, and perhaps your cities. But so much has been forgotten." She shrugged and chewed her dried meat. "All we can do is survive and hope something will change."
"So you've never seen active vehicles in the sky? There's no corporate or governmental presence here?"
Phasma shook her head.
"There are only the Skyre and the Claws, and then the Wastelands. No one who has gone there has returned in many years." "Fascinating. None of this is recorded, you see. The planet is listed as uninhabited, but the rest of the files were wiped."
"What are files?"
Brendel ignored that.
"Tell me, Phasma, are there any other fighters in the area who share your prowess? Neighboring bands that might have worthy warriors like you?"
At that, Phasma gave a haughty chuckle.
"No, Brendel. My fighters are the best warriors here. Baldur was mighty, but I killed him. Perhaps his clan still has fighters, but there are no other bands. There were once when I was young, but they either died out or joined stronger bands. We lose ground every year as the sea rises. That is why we're anxious to leave with you."
"It's funny that your land is being swallowed," Brendel said. "From the sky, we noted several other land masses that appeared far more habitable."
"Grasslands and forests, perhaps,"
even a few large compounds that suggest some sort of civilization. But no one answered our distress call. What do you make of that?
I wish to see it myself from your ship. Are all the night stars planets like ours?
Some are. Most planets are significantly more advanced.
But most planets don't have fighters as tough as we are.
Phasma looked around at her warband proudly.
How will we become warriors for your clan, Brendel?
Brendel went very stiff.
The First Order is not a clan, Phasma. It is a political and military organization.
These words, political and military, what do they mean?
She asked, although she gave a one-shouldered shrug, as if to imply that if they weren't part of the Skyr dialect, they couldn't possibly be important. Brendel considered her as if assessing her intelligence.
It means, in short, that the First Order seeks to rule those who cannot rule themselves, to establish stability and promote progress for all.
Phasma held out an arm, gesturing at the horizon.
And what would the First Order think of this place?
This place.
Brendel paused as he fought to chew a bit of dried meat.
Many parts of this planet could be useful if we could disable the defense system. It could be colonized and used for training and support, possibly even farming or mining. It's unfortunate that your people have been trapped in such an unwelcoming area. But as I've said, we can offer you something more than scratching away at the rock.
What about those who aren't warriors? Phasma asked. Perhaps they could be transported to these better parts that you've seen.
Perhaps,
Brendel said, but he quickly changed the subject back to Phasma's fighting. Siv made note that as Phasma spoke with Brendel, she matched her speech patterns to his. Her consonants became clipped, her vowels drew out longer, and in just a few hours she began to develop the stranger's accent. A natural mimic, although Siv had never heard the phrase. Most of the Skyr folk still had trouble understanding Brendel's accent and continued to focus on the most important aspect of Parnassian life, staying alive. Siv and her friends were constantly scanning the borderlands, waiting for the Clawfolk to appear and reclaim their prize. It wasn't long before they were on the move again, headed back into Skyr territory. Phasma went first with Torben and Brendel at her side, and the rest of her warriors helping Brendel's troops navigate the chasms in their armor. When the first sentry called out a greeting, Phasma and her warriors returned it with gusto, beating their weapons against their shoulders and howling their victory. The sentry did not reflect their triumph, but shared solemn news. Keldo and the rest of the Skyr folk were waiting for them in the Nautilus. It was considered a great omen that the strangers from the stars had fallen to Parnassos when the cave was revealed, and Keldo held court within, sitting on the ancestral throne of stone. A contingent of warriors guarded the cave's entrance. Phasma and Brendel passed them and entered side by side, trailed by the stormtroopers who were allowed to keep their weapons and treated as valued guests. Torben, Carr, Siv, and Gosta followed. Despite the formality of the meeting, it was a time of great excitement and hope, for no living Skyr had met someone from beyond the stars, someone who had survived the orbital defense system that usually reduced every encroaching ship to a pile of component parts. The great skylight shone down on Keldo's throne. He looked resplendent and solemn, wearing his full Skyr costume composed of bright fabrics and antique feathers carefully stored for great occasions of state. Across both his knees sat an antique staff made of golden metal, some ancient piece of mining equipment handed down from leader to leader among the Skyr, and hidden in the Nautilus with other treasures while the sea level was high. There was room beside him for Phasma, but this time he sat in the center of the throne, denying his sister her rightful place.
Brother, I bring gifts. First, for you.
Phasma's warriors knew not to pry, but they'd all been curious about the bundle in the pack on her back, which she hadn't possessed on the way to the Clawlands. Now she unwrapped it to reveal the unexpected. A leg. Siv recognized it as belonging to Brendel's missing translator droid. With a few adjustments, you could stand on your own again. Keldo took the leg from her, careful not to betray how hard it was for him to hold such a heavy device. He considered it from all angles before leaning it against his throne, his face a war of hope and rage. Siv understood perfectly. Yes, it was a gift, but it was also an insult. Perhaps even Phasma's way of saying, "I told you so," in front of the entire Skyre. Keldo had forbidden her from leaving, but he'd been unable to stop her, to follow her. He was, in that respect, incapable, and it made him furious.
"And what else did you bring me?"
he asked carefully. "A visitor from beyond the sky," Phasma said. "This is Brendel Hux, and these are his soldiers. They call themselves Stormtroopers, and their clan is the First Order. Brendel commands many great ships waiting in the sky." But Keldo did not smile. His fingers went white where they curled on the stone and around the staff.
"Sister, what of our treaty? Surely our ally, Balder of the Claw Clan, did not freely allow you to bring this Brendel Hux with you into the Skyre territories."
Phasma held her temper. She stood tall, still wearing her mask, and did not bend to her brother in any way. "These people and their ships are more important than any treaty. If we can help him reach his fallen ship, Brendel Hux will contact his people, and they will give us food, water, supplies, medicines, and access to the many advancements our civilization has lost." Keldo glared his dissatisfaction, his voice booming in the cave.
"Were these people found in the borderlands, then?"
"They were beyond Claw territory, in the unclaimed wastelands."
"And did Balder allow you safe passage?"
Phasma breathed out, making steam pour from her mask. When she spoke, her voice was harsh and low, almost animalistic.
"No, he did not. Balder demanded the child Frey for my insolence in crossing the border, so I took these people for the Skyre and killed Balder for his presumption. That foul Dug will trouble us no more."
The cave went silent, the Skyre folk caught between Phasma's fierce joy and Keldo's disappointment.
"And how many of our people died during this pointless skirmish?"
Phasma's voice was tight.
"2, and at least 12 claws. But the loss will be more than paid back. Brendel Hux will help us. Our children will be born and raised in safety among the stars, and our warriors will join the glory of the First Order and bring honor to our people."
Keldo sighed.
"These are a child's dreams, sister. Your actions have broken the peace between the bands, and your foolishness has lost precious lives."
"These are a warrior's dreams, brother, and they are real. Balder is dead, and the Claw Band has been defeated. We killed a dozen of his finest warriors and claimed this prize fairly. Brendel Hux is our greatest hope for the future. With his help, we can become the most powerful band on the planet and keep our people from going extinct. There are better lands beyond the sea, Brendel tells me. Lands where buildings still stand and the ground is solid and yields crops and fruits and beasts. He can take us there in his ship, relocate us and all our treasures to a safer place. This will be our reward for returning him to his people. He need only call them and they will appear."
Siv noted here that, to her knowledge, Brendel had not promised any such thing. But she would never dare to correct Phasma, especially not in public. Keldo held up a finger.
"If his people are so great, why do they not simply find him on their own? If their technology is like that which we lost, their ships should already be able to immobilize the orbital defense system and search the planet's surface for his lost ship. I have read the old manuals, Brendel Hux.
Does your ship not have a homing device?
Siv couldn't see Phasma's face, but she watched her leader's hands tense into fists. Even Siv hadn't known that Keldo had taught himself to read, although she had noted he had an old data pad among his belongings. He'd been keeping secrets of his own. Hearing Keldo's patronizing tone, Brendel spoke for himself, albeit slowly and as if talking to a child.
The orbital defense system may have destroyed my craft as well as any beacons that could contact my people independently. Even if they should come looking for us, we are far from the ship's crash site, and now even farther from our escape pod. It is of utmost urgency that I am returned to my fallen ship, so that my troops and I might repair the comm array and make direct contact with my superiors. Your sister is correct. An entire fleet of ships, millions of men strong, awaits my order.
Keldo sat still as stone on his throne, glaring at Phasma. He was livid, but he was hurt. Siv knew him well, and she had never known the siblings to fight. Everyone was on new ground, a rare thing in the Skyre. Phasma stepped forward, but he held out a hand as if commanding her to come no farther.
Brother, listen. This is for the best. My warriors and I will take Brendel Hux and his people to find this ship. I have seen the unclaimed wastelands beyond Baldur's territory, and it is like nothing we have seen before. Land as far as the eye can see, barren and covered with only sand. No rocks, no water. Without your leg, you will be unable to make this journey with the required speed, so I beg you, stay here where you will be more comfortable, and I will deliver glory to the Skyre when the goal has been achieved.
But sister, you brought me a new leg.
But brother, you must first learn to use it.
The inside of the Nautilus suddenly felt far too small, and the Skyre folk huddled together, confused by their leader's hostility and by the presence of strangers from space. They looked to Keldo and Phasma for answers, but all they found was tension. Somewhere, softly, Frey began to cry. When Keldo spoke again, his voice was unfriendly and cold, far from Phasma's warm, anxious pledge.
But sister, the ship is past Baldur's territory. Do you know whose territory that is, or how they fight upon their ground?
The Claws will have chosen a new leader by now, and they may even be planning a counterattack that would bring violence to our land.
We have lost several of our own warriors, and I see wounds among our remaining people already beginning to fester. It's simply too risky for you and your fine warriors to leave us here unguarded when you've upset the balance of peace.
But brother...
Phasma, hear me. People of the Skyre, hear me. Brendel Hux, hear me. I forbid any of my people from pursuing this quest. Brendel Hux and his people are welcome to stay here and join the Skyre, but the risk of leaving is simply too great. Our people have fought and died to protect this cave and this land. You may have destroyed our hard-won peace with our greatest enemy, Phasma, but I will not let you destroy the Skyre. A recovery mission is out of the question.
He slammed his staff on the ground, and the sound echoed throughout the now silent Nautilus, rippling down through all the hidden caves and out somewhere to the sea.
The Skyre has spoken.
Phasma said nothing. When the Skyre had spoken, there were no further arguments. Tonight, her brother had chosen to take on the formal mantle of rulership, denying her the place she'd earned at his side as his sword arm. As she well knew, there was no fighting among the people of the Skyre. Here, in the Nautilus, the gathered people were his to command. She nodded her acquiescence, turned on her heel, and strode off into the darkness. If only Keldo had understood his sister better. That night, while the Skyre folk slept in their hammocks among the rock spires, Phasma crept into the swiftly filling Nautilus cave and loaded several packs with the tribe's collected food, tools, and water, the carefully scavenged and hoarded stores they kept for emergencies. Perhaps she reasoned that the First Order would be more than happy to replenish everything she took. Perhaps she cared only about forging an alliance with Brendel. Whatever reason she gave herself, Phasma headed out into the night with her four closest warriors, Brendel Hux and his three troopers, leaving a crippled and defenseless tribe behind them.